Good evening. Welcome to City of Angels Families and Recovery. My name is Bill, and I'm here with my lovely wife, Kathy.
Hi, I'm surrendered.
No way. What do you mean surrendered? Give up? Quit? No more? Done? I'm out of the game. I'm done. I'm off to the sidelines. I'm on the bench. I can't accept what's happening. It's finished. It's over. I'm done. I lost. I'm dead. What is it? Surrender. I have no idea, but that is definitely our topic for tonight. I surrender to my wife here. No. But before we get in surrender, I just want to say welcome aboard. I'm glad you're here. This is December, and in December, I'm going to do some recap from our last year's show in December, which had to do how to handle the holidays. But before I even do that, I just want to say, if you're somebody who needs help right now, you could call City of Angels at 609-910-4942. You could write Kathy and I or email Kathy and I at Kathy and Bill, and that's Kathy with a C, Kathy and Bill at cityofangelsnj.org. We'd love to hear from you. Check out City of Angels at coaradio.com. They got all kinds of programs for you, healing the scars and women's laughter and recovery, etc. There's tons of programs out there for you. So welcome aboard. We are going to talk about surrender and what does that mean. So before we get into our opening charge, I'm going to go over some of our program from a year ago. How do you want to position yourself during the holidays with the addict in your life, or if you're an addict, how you're going to get through the holidays? So, Kath, why don't you read us off some ideas?
Okay, so some of the thoughts that we brought out in that show, the suicide actually drops off at the holidays, but after the holidays, it picks up sometimes. Start talking to safe people in your circle about the truth, so don't keep the addiction or the fact that you're struggling with addiction in your family. Don't keep it a secret. Talk to some people about it. Take a few moments to reflect on what your family is or isn't. It's a reality check. It's a reminder of who your family is.
Yeah, don't think everything's going to be honky-dory. You have an addict in your life, or you are an addict, so the family drives you nuts. The addict drives you nuts if you're the family. Don't go in there thinking everything's going to be fine. You know, oh, yeah, I'll just ignore it. We'll just go. We'll ad lib it. Don't do that.
Prepare yourself to accept them for who they are. Plan ahead by creating a list of unacceptable behaviors. Determine your set boundaries and consequences. Tell your loved ones what these boundaries and consequences are. Prepare to develop strategies that will enable you to take care of yourself.
You need to understand and accept justice and boundaries go hand in hand with mercy and grace.
Oh, that's good.
All want to be nice people. We want to, you know, get along fine. But justice and boundaries goes hand in hand with mercy and grace. Plan ahead. If you're the addict, mm-hmm. I want you to plan ahead. Talk to a sponsor. Talk to your therapist about what you're working on and what's in your recovery plan right now as you head into the holidays, and come up with some strategies about how you're going to handle the holidays as an addict. Daily, make a list of things that you're thankful for. So again, as an addict, you're much under stress because you're in your sobriety doesn't always is smooth and easy. So you may be under stress emotionally, especially around holidays where there's lots of alcohol and drug use. Make a list of things you're thankful. Be positive. Exercise. Go walk. Go jog. Go take. Get on a treadmill, elliptical. Relax. Meditate. Watch your intake of caffeine, nicotine, and sugars, because these are all triggers to go along with drinking. So watch your, listen and pay attention to your body as an addict. What is it saying to you? Are you getting it all hyped up and all stressed out? Remember, for both the family and the addict, resentment is the number one cause of failed sobriety for the addict, and a number one cause for anger, frustration, mm-hmm. and everything else for the family.
For the family.
So
yep.
Be careful about resentment. This is not the time in the holiday season, if you're going to a party, to go start thinking about what you did to me or what I did to you. You leave that for after the holiday party. During these holiday season, it's not time to get into resentments, what I did to you or what you did to me. During the holiday season, enjoy company, fellowship with one another. All right, so these are some of the strategies from last year's How to Survive the Holidays. Again, go listen to it on coaradio.com, Families in Recovery. All right, I hope those ideas help you as far as being able to get through the holidays. And now we want to get into our program tonight on surrender. As I said earlier, what's that mean? I give up. I surrender. I'm dead. No good. Finish. Quit. Off to the sidelines. I'm out of the game. What's it mean? Don't care anymore. What? Well, that's what we're going to find out. So, Kath, why don't you start us off by reading us the opening charge?
Okay.
Oh, wait. Oh. Opening charge means go into battle. I'm going to opening charge, but we're surrendering the battle,
yeah,
so we quit.
You're looking at surrender as a bad thing, when in reality it's a great thing.
Oh, okay. So, and actually, opening charge is not a charge for a battle. It's actually a challenge. So this is our opening charge or challenge to you, our listeners, and on surrender. So here it is.
Here you go. Surrender. Master the lessons of your present circumstance. We do not move forward by resisting what is undesirable in our life today. We move forward, we grow, we change by acceptance. Avoidance is not the key. Surrender opens the door. Listen to this truth. We are each in our present circumstance for a reason. There is a lesson, a valuable lesson, that must be learned before we can move forward. Something important is being worked out in us and in those around us. We may not be able to identify it today, but we know that it is important. We can know that it is good. Overcome not by force, overcome by surrender. The battle is fought and won inside ourselves. We must go through it until we learn, until we accept, until we become grateful, until we are set free. Surrendering is a highly personal and a spiritual experience. Surrender is not something we can do in our heads. It is not something we can force or control by willpower. It is something we experience. Acceptance and surrender is not a tidy package. Often it is a package full of hard feelings, anger, rage, and sadness, followed by release and relief. As we surrender, we experience our frustrations and anger at God, at other people, at ourselves, and at life. Then we come to the core of the pain and sadness and heavy emotional burdens inside must come out before we can feel good. Often these emotions are connected to healing and release at a deep level. Surrender sets the wheels in motion. Our fear and anxiety about the future are released when we surrender. We are protected. We are guided. Good things have been planned. The next step is now being taken. Surrender is the process that allows us to move forward. It is how our higher power moves us forward. Trust in the rightness of timing and the freedom at the other end as you struggle humanly through the spiritual experience. Today I will be open to the lessons of my present circumstance. I do not have to label, know, or understand what I'm learning. I will see clearly in time, for today, trust and gratitude are sufficient. I will be open to the process of surrender in my life. I will allow myself all the awkward and potential emotions that must be released.
Very good, Kath. So that's our opening charge there for you tonight. I hope you enjoy that. Right now, what we have here is we have actually interviewed some friends of ours. So we have recordings of maybe a half a dozen people that we asked, what's it mean to you to surrender? So we're going to play them right now for you.
Oh, man.
So, Eddie, what do you think about surrender? What's your version of what that means to you?
Surrender to me meant surrendering to God, surrendering my will. It's not a sign of weakness, surrender. It's a sign of just being ready for anything that God has to offer me and accepting everything that comes through God to me. A surrender to me is a very positive thing. I had a surrender in my life. My life is I can't even describe. Once I surrendered, I knew everything was going to be okay. I think that's all.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
It was beautiful. So, what do you think surrender is to you, Denise?
I guess to me, surrender is like the ultimate peace, where you're really letting go of all your expectations, of almost everything, really.
That's very
whatever
hard.
The outcome can be, and really turning it over to God. And it's huge to be able to do it, but I think that's the ultimate saying it for surrender.
Yeah. Wow, that's big.
Really letting go.
That's a big one. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right, Charlie, so what do you think surrender is to you?
Surrender is just letting go and letting things be the way they're supposed to be.
Mm, that's good. All right, Nancy, so what is your version? What do you think surrender is?
Well, Kathy, to me, I think surrender is giving my complete faith and trust over to someone that I trust that will be enriching and helpful for me and those I love.
That's beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Bonnie, what does surrender mean to you?
Surrender is a process of letting go.
Mm.
It's a never-ending process, and it's turning to our higher power.
Mm-hmm. And is letting go to your higher power, letting go just in life in general, or?
Yeah, it's in every aspect of my life, turning mm-hmm. it over.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a very difficult, and you need to be focused in order to do it.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Did I have to say my name?
All right. So, Gina, I'm wondering what your version of what surrender means to you.
Surrender means to me giving my will up to God, knowing that there's nothing I could do to control anything except my own thoughts. And that's what surrender means to me. Thank you.
Beautiful. All right, so Karen, what do you think surrender means to you?
Surrender means to giving your heart to the Lord in your daily life.
It's beautiful.
So there you have a bunch of understanding and takes on surrender. What jumped out to you, Kath, when you listened to all of those?
Instead of being a negative thing, surrender seems like something that you do and you gain something.
Yeah, they kind of linked a little bit of like peace.
Yeah.
Once I was able to do that, there was a peace with that.
Yeah, you gained something.
You gained something. Yeah. Yeah, and I noticed it was like a lot of them, if not all of them, felt that surrender was to God.
Yeah.
Their higher power, God.
Yeah.
You know, so they didn't say surrender to the addict or, surrender to something else. It's so, interesting.
Surrender that I'm lost. I'm done. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. So, yeah, I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah, it was fun. It was fun to do.
So what does it mean then? So now they all talked about surrender. Yeah, surrender to God. But what's that mean?
Yeah. So, like, again, we often think of the word surrender as giving up, losing, admitting defeat. It's frequently used in the context of speaking about a battle or in giving in to something you don't want to lose, such as your right or property. But we heard a little different take that maybe surrender could mean something different, that battle's lost, giving up, admitting defeat, and actually could that actually be a positive action? You know, what if instead of being a mark of failure, surrender could bring out our greatest success?
Yeah, so that surrender becomes a part of success.
Yeah.
Instead of surrender being a part of losing.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, in the program, it's always talked about in Noranon that, you know, everybody, our codependents come in and, you know, we just think we want to fix our addict. And so we come in and we want to get all the tools, the weapons to finally win the battle against our problems, our addictions, to fix our loved ones. But instead, these people talk about other things, and we're like, what are you talking about? You know, our aim is not to beat it or subdue it or to put ourselves back in charge. The very idea is to give up, to admit defeat and quit fighting.
Yeah, so, you know, I like what you're saying here. So if you're going to go to Noranon meeting,
everybody comes to want the answers to how to fix their addicts.
How to fix, that's not the whole purpose and of all that.
And then
right?
The premise is they walk in the doors and we tell them you can't fix your addict, which they're like, what?
What am I doing here for?
Yeah. And then they end up being here and we tell them it's for you.
Yeah.
We actually find that surrender is actually our greatest source of strength.
Right.
Which is like, what? You know, instead of the never-ending cycle of attempt and failure, the program of recovery presents us with a new opportunity. Lay down our weapons, stop fighting, and embrace powerlessness. Surrender. This is the paradox. Strength arises out of complete defeat and weakness, the loss of one's old life as a condition for finding a new one.
Yeah, that just sounds so funny about, surrender. Giving up powerlessness and surrender. But if you think about it, listen, here's surrender. Surrender is to agree to stop fighting, right? Stop hiding, stop resisting. Surrender is to give up control or use of something or someone. You know, you're in control. Surrender is to allow something to happen, to yield power, to give up control,
and that's
to give up possession to somebody else. That's all
hard
surrender.
Because all of us in codependence are completely, our whole avenue of life is controlling.
Yeah, we want the battle. You say, well, if I give up the battle, you're telling me to lay down my arms, stop the fight to save my addict, to save my child from dying. To give up completely, to forego it, but then here it is, to give up that power to another.
Yeah.
See, surrender to another, to give up that control to somebody else, which leads us to acceptance. See, when we surrender, we acknowledge our powerlessness. Because let me ask you, how successful have you been with your addict? Are they? Because I'll tell you what, if you're successful, you wouldn't be listening to the show. You wouldn't be going to any meetings because you're done. Your addict is on their life. They have their own job. So apparently you have not come to the place of realizing your powerlessness. But if you do come to surrender to the place of powerlessness, then it turns into acceptance. Acceptance of what? That somebody else is willing to take on the battle. Higher power.
That's great.
Is willing to take on the power. So acceptance is the act of taking or receiving something offered by somebody else. So surrender your battle to save your addict's life to the higher power and accept the higher power saying, I will take the battle for you.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
That's very interesting.
So, Bill, this is a really scary prospect, and it's kind of foreign to what all of us think.
It's against our natural tendency. I want to fight. I'm going to fight. We're all fighters.
Yeah.
A lot of people are fighters, yeah.
We assume that if we admit defeat, that we cannot change our loved one of their addictions, then we are, in essence, handing them over to a drug overdose or death. But that isn't the idea. You are not choosing to succumb. You are choosing to end the battle that you are already losing.
Yeah, exactly.
As codependents or addicts, we need to reframe or understand surrender and begin to see it as the very health and life-giving act that it can be. When we surrender the fight with codependency addictions, we are free to live a battle-free life of change.
I don't have to fight anymore for that change. I let it go. And the change will occur at its own pace, at its own rate, at its own way.
So you're saying that, in our fight to change ourselves and our loved ones, we're actually preventing change. Surrender.
We're influencing it.
Yeah.
We're definitely influencing it. And we've always talked about that in the past where sometimes our influence is really inhibiting. We're enabling the addict. We're inhibiting their process anyway. So, it does go hand in hand with that concept.
So in this thought process, we're free to grow and develop as people, to know God, to serve others, and to live lives of purpose. These are actually the spoils of war, the good we have the privilege to claim if we would just simply raise the white flag.
Yeah. And can we end up trusting that God, the higher power, can take that control and win that battle? No, we really don't, do we?
Right.
No,
right.
Because we're still fighting. God can't save them. I can't risk my addict dying before God takes control and brings them to the place they need to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is very interesting. I had an addict recently I was talking to, and they were stuck in a work situation. It wasn't going well. Wasn't well at all. But they see no options. So they were stuck. They were staying there. They were battling. They were fighting. They weren't getting along with the boss. The work was . And it's like, can you trust that God was in control, or do I have to go in there and fix him? I didn't have to fix him. Guess what happened? It took its course after so long, and we're going to get into fear of change and what inhibits change. After so long, the boss and him, it just escalated to a peak. The boss fired him. And so the guy was like, wow, now I'm all upset and angry. He fired me. And that's why I just said one statement of surrender. How do you know God didn't work something that you were incapable of working yourself? Mm-hmm. You thought you could fix your work situation and you couldn't. Maybe God's moving you on to something better.
And that's,
can I accept that God took control?
Yeah. Actually, the concept of surrender and recovery goes beyond the admission that the battles with addiction we will lose every time, that's for sure. The initial surrender and admission of powerlessness is only the beginning of a lifelong of ego reduction through surrender. It's a matter of humility, or letting our ego down and saying, I give up. I can't fix this.
Yeah, and our egos are too proud to do that.
Really?
Oh, think that I got to give up?
Yeah, so the surrender is about humility. But in our powerlessness, that's when we're turning to a higher power. You know, we find this surrender to God's care, not only with the addictions, but our entire life as well. We see that we don't often know what is best for ourselves, and we begin to trust that God does. In continuing to surrender to God's will for our lives and in remaining committed to not fighting the things we cannot change, we gain freedom unlike any that we have ever known. You know, when we look back, we realize that the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have planned. And surrendering our problems to a higher power, realizing our higher power wants only the best for us. Hand over your troubles to a power greater than your own, and your higher power will replace them with a new strength we never thought possible.
Yeah. What are the first three steps, Kath?
Oh.
First step, step one.
We admitted we were powerless over our addict or, you know, our codependency.
Ourselves, right, yep.
And that our lives were unmanageable.
Right.
You know, and step two as well, came to believe that perhaps a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity.
Or our addicts.
Yes.
To sanity.
Yes.
Restore us or our addicts to sanity. And number three?
Step three is decided to turn our will and our life over to God as we understand Him.
Surrender. First three steps, all about getting to the place of surrender. What we're talking about here, giving up that battle, laying down your egos to think that you're the one who has all the answers. How well has it been working for you? That's all I keep saying. It's been years.
And what we have to remember that is if we continue to choose to think we're the answer and never finding the answer, where is that taking us? We just need to decide that maybe our higher power is greater than our own ways.
Yeah, so our higher power has our best in mind, but we become so fixated on certain end results that we keep fighting. So even though our higher power is saying, I got control, we keep fighting and we keep battling it, which causes ourselves even more stress. It's like control is looking for a specific outcome. We already have in our mind what I want to achieve. And so that outcome we think is the best for us, the best for our addict. Well, how's it working again? You know, we try to control things.
If we know what's best, then, you know, we, again, that would have happened and we're all done and things are great.
And everything, you know, and what they say the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over.
Yeah.
And so if we keep doing it over, how's it working for us? But we keep trying to tell ourselves, well, we got some successes. I've been able to control, you know. And so we try to control everything in our lives and the addict's lives because we think what will happen if we don't control it. You say, oh, the addict's going to die, or the addict's going to be cold, or the addict's not going to be eat, or control my family, control my spouse, control my own life. And we cause ourselves such great insanity. But, you know, when we can trust that we're okay no matter what circumstances come our way, we don't need to micromanage that universe then. I can let go of control, say, I don't have to sit here and anticipate what, you know, the dinner table, is it set correctly? Does dishes out? What's going on? It's like a constant battle, you know,
And well, when we let go of our fixed outcome that we want, you know, we open up the idea of the wonderful possibilities that aren't even there when we're attached to the right one.
Yeah, because we're...
So we're fixated on what we want to happen, but we don't realize God, the God of the universe, has so many better outcomes.
Yeah, and since we're fighting so hard and pushing so hard, we're actually prohibiting those from happening.
Yeah.
God may want something to go in a certain direction. Like I said about that guy at his work. God may say, you know, I'm trying to move you in a direction and you're just sitting there fighting about keeping that job. I don't want you in that job. I need to move you on.
A better job.
And so finally the job does explode. He moves on and gets a better life.
Yeah.
You know.
So
what's it like?
You know, how do we begin to surrender like this and allow what is? Well, I think the first thing is acknowledge and notice when you're in control mode and choose to let it go. Consciously and deliberately shift into surrender. You know, think of yourself on a stream, paddling upstream against the current. It's hard. It's a fight. That's what control flow mode feels like. When you choose to surrender, visualize your boat turning around, you dropping the oars and floating downstream.
Yeah. I mean, think about how much peace you would have.
Don't you feel more peace that way?
That's what I'm thinking, you know.
I mean, what that reminds me of is the other day we had some friends, you know, who are down on their, you know, everything's going wrong for them right now. This fellow lost his job and she called me in tears crying and I didn't know what to say and I felt at a loss and I'm like, Lord, you bring people to me, but I can't fix it. And so I finished the conversation and the rest of the day, I just didn't know what to do. And then in the evening, I just decided, you know what, Lord, this isn't my battle. This isn't my fight. I can't fix it for this person. I'm just going to call her, tell her I can't fix it and cry with her. And that's what I did.
Yeah.
I called her back. We just cried together. And I said, I can't fix this for you. I don't know what God has in plan, but with you, I'm going to trust and wait and see. And so we just cried together.
Yeah.
And that was surrender. And you know what? I felt more peaceful. The next day, I woke up with less fear.
Yep.
Because it's not my job to fix it.
No. And then what was interesting is God provided for them through a different mean.
Yes.
He did not provide for them through you.
Right.
You know, again, right. You know, we think that every time somebody talks to us, we have to have a solution.
Yeah.
You know, you talk to me, I'm going to tell you the answer.
Right.
You know, there's a problem here, I'm going to fix it. Well, why do I do that to myself all the time? I'm not the savior,
mm-hmm.
You know?
And that's what this is about, surrendering. Okay, God, what do I can't do this. Okay, I'm just going to be with these people and love them and cry with them if that's what it is, and we'll wait together.
On a side note, I just want to let you know, that's kind of what witnessing is about. You ever hear people say witness? So the witness when it comes to recovery is the fact that I could give a witness or testimony that I seen God work in my life in ways that were outside of my control. God delivered me from this problem. That means I surrendered. I let go of control. He actually came up with the solution, not me. That's the witness. When I tell other people, the higher power came up with a solution, not me.
So what you're saying is our experiences, sharing our experiences with others is what ends up helping them have hope.
Yeah. And it's not the solutions that I fixed it. I figured it out. It isn't about that.
No.
You know, surrender does literally mean stop the fight. Stop the fighting with yourself. Stop the fighting with the universe and the natural flow of things. Stop resisting and pushing against reality. Because in the end, what it's really saying is you don't accept that God maybe exists. Maybe you don't even accept that God exists or that there's a higher power out there that could turn around and actually take the lead and with resolutions and resolving in people's lives. You know, so this surrender is acceptance of what God offers you, plus the faith that He will work it out and all will be well in the way that He works it out in the end.
And without our input.
Exactly. You'll not only feel better, but it actually may produce better results because we keep mucking the water up. You know, you want to let go. You say, well, but I'm struggling to let go. What about this? You tell yourself this. Somebody else is responsible for the outcome.
That's
right?
Real good.
Somebody else. That's what the whole point is. I surrender my control that I think I have to fix, heal, and everybody. And I accept somebody else is responsible for that outcome. And that's God, my higher power. It then frees him up to use other resources around me because I keep getting in the way.
That's so true. That's right? So true. Yes.
So the point is, it's a little harder to make this shift from control to surrender. You know, there's things that make it hard. What are some of the things that make it hard to make that shift from control and say, okay, Bill, so I hear what you're saying. I'll want to do it. I want to let go of control. Is it going to be easy? No.
No.
But what are some of the issues?
So, well, I think the biggest issue is fear.
Yeah.
We are so fearful. You know, when you pinpoint the fear, one thing we need to start doing is, you know, question it. Question what the fear is telling you. A very simplified example is, you know, if you're afraid the night's going to be ruined if your boyfriend doesn't remember to pick up the eggplant for dinner.
Right, because you had planned.
And you already reminded him 14 times, so you need to question that assumption, because can you really know that the night would be ruined without the eggplant?
Yeah.
And if it would be ruined, by your definition anyway, what's so bad about that?
Right, because you would just make something else for dinner.
So we have fears about things, and we've assigned the end result to that fear. But what we're saying here is we might want to challenge what that end result is that we think it is, because it might not be what we're projecting.
Exactly. That's right. So we mess. For instance, you've chased the addict around for years and years and years, and that addict still has survived for years and years. But you made an assumption without you in that addict's life, without you pursuing that addict, without you chasing them, harping upon them, constantly putting them down, constantly. I had one lady who turned around and said to me, you know what? I had realized my son was out on a street somewheres and he didn't have a hat and it was cold. The temperature had changed. It was cold. That lady went and drove around. Listen, I'm not making this story up. For hours. Hours. Looking in the city for hours to find his son so she could put a hat on his head. Are you kidding me? Talk about, that's an extreme case of control and not trusting that God could take care of that addict. Or the addict could take care of himself and find his own hat, or how he's going to keep warm or whatever.
He probably got there and he found like six hats.
Yeah, he probably had six hats on his head.
Yeah,
So that fear of control of what the outcome's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that also slips us into the idea that we have to question whose business we're in anyway.
Right, yeah.
If we're out chasing our addict, trying to get him off the streets or trying to give him a hat, Is that really our business? You know, we're slipping into not being.
It's not your business whether that addict is warm tonight. It's not your business whether your addict is eaten tonight. No, they are out there in the streets because of their free choice. They know in their minds that there are other solutions. They could turn themselves into a rehab center. They could turn themselves into a Salvation Army for a night's sleep in a bed. They have choices.
And I'm sure that
But you can't accept that they have choices.
And I'm sure that you've told them that they can come to you for help to get into rehab, and you'll take them there in a second and do whatever you can to help them do that.
Right, right.
So, you know, you got to consider what would letting go feel like?
Yeah,
it feel like?
I would say it would feel like this. I surrender my fears of those outcomes.
Yeah.
You know, I surrender my control and I surrender the outcome all to God.
Mm-hmm.
You see, to my higher power. I'm going to trust you, God, that you're in control and that you will oversee that outcome. And then I have peace that, you know what? My addict is going to be my addict. The addict is going to either have a hat on his head or not. He'll probably survive because he's been using for how many years and survived. You see what I'm saying? You want them to go on with a better life. You want them to get a job. You want them to be settled and established. Well, they haven't been yet. It's been 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, or 10. And so can I let go of control that they will continue to exist as you pray and hope that the higher power can get through to them to move them to a place to improve their life?
Well, I mean, I have a really good example of all this. You know, our buddy who's been in the jail for a while, you know, one of his biggest issues is he didn't want to have to go to other counties.
Yeah.
You know, to address the issues. They were hoping it all got lumped into one thing. Well, it ended up being that nothing worked out anyway, and he ended up getting taken to all those other counties.
Right.
And you know what? It's not so bad.
Well, yeah, it's working its way out.
Yeah, it's working its way out, and he's keeping a great attitude, and all of these, now he has the assurance that all of these other issues are taken care of.
Meantime, if if you or his spouse or friends were all anxious, I'm all, he has to go here now, he has to go there, and I'm all upset, I'm all kind of control freakish out because this is happening to him because I don't want it to happen. Mm-hmm. Control. Mm-hmm. The outcome. I don't like this outcome. I don't like this process. I want it. You're right.
Apparently, you know, God wanted this to happen for, you know, whatever reason.
I think it's a good place to transition, Kath, into the spiritual topic of this, because the spiritual topic parallels that very thing.
It really does, because and him and I specifically have talked about this particular avenue and this particular concept of surrender, because we both read a book and we both were talking about that we put a line in the sand as to what's acceptable to God. And so you're going to hear about that in this story.
All right, let's listen to that right now.
Well, hello, everybody. We've come to our spiritual section at this time, and I'm going to talk a little bit about spiritual surrender and what that might mean in our lives. So if you've ever been involved in personal development and spiritual growth, you've probably heard someone talk about surrender. Surrender can be different things to different people. You know, sometimes in a movie you see where the character surrenders to the enemy, and it means giving up. And, you know, that's a perspective from one level. You either fight and win or quit and lose. But I'd like us to look at surrender from a different viewpoint. You know, why would you want to surrender? Well, what is surrender? From a spiritual perspective, surrender is allowing what is to just be, or being with life as it is in this present moment. You know, this kind of surrender doesn't mean to give up or quit on yourself or life or on others. Instead, it's more of a closely related to the saying of let go and let God. If we believe what it says in Jeremiah 29:11, for I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you a hope and a future, then we might want to consider if we might want to risk trusting a God that promises something like that. To surrender in this sense might mean that we've relaxed our fixed thinking adequately and can allow deeper wisdom to inform our directions. You know, so why is it important to surrender? I think because sometimes we really become so fixated on a certain end result, and we keep fighting to get that end result. And maybe that's not best for us or those in our life. You know, my one friend, you know, insisted that her son get an apartment in a certain complex, and it didn't help him. He ended up still being on drugs, and he ended up having to lose that apartment. And so sometimes we insist on what we think is the best thing, and the importance of surrender is we have to let it go. You know, it just doesn't work out. You know, we can ask ourselves if what we're doing is working. Is our son or our daughter or our husband, wife, are they free from addictions because of our control and because of what we want and our will? I don't think so. That doesn't normally seem to be the case. Well, how do we even begin to consider or think about surrender and allow it to be? You would have to let go of your tightly held ideas of what you think must be. And this would mean loosening and transforming the attachments that are connected to your personal will in order to move with and relax into God's will. It says in Isaiah 55:8-9, for my thoughts are not your thoughts, nor are your ways my ways, declares the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. So this is kind of like a profound movement towards surrender, and it gives us a sense of releasing into something bigger than us and our own personal agendas. One could even say that we're moving with the flow of life, and we can experience being held by God. There's some people in my Noronon meeting said that the way that they surrendered their, you know, their children, addicted children, to God was they pictured handing them over to God and saying, here, God, you take care of them, I can't. And, you know, a lot of times we think our way is best, but sometimes we don't think that what God has in mind is for our best, but God's will and purpose will always be for the good of all. You know, so how do we know if we're ready to surrender? Well, we might want to look at the 12 steps. Because the first step is we admitted we were powerless over our addict, our addiction, whatever it might be, and that our lives have become unmanageable. So is your life unmanageable right now? If it is, then you've taken the first step towards surrender. And the second step is came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. That's what we're kind of talking about here. And the third step of the 12 steps is surrender. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. I have a story here I would like to tell you. And it's about Brian and Christine. And they were struggling with some of these same questions also. And I'll just tell you their story from her perspective. It says, multiple hospital stays with my daughter were exhausting, but I held faith. Losing Brian's family members one by one until there was only one left who was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer was incomprehensible, but I still held faith. Being hospitalized 7.5 weeks with a placenta abruption was terrifying, but I held faith. I held to the faith that God works for my good, and though I did not necessarily understand the trial, I trusted God's bigger unseen plan. God and I had a deal. I would endure the trials that came my way as long as He acknowledged my stopping point. He knew where my line in the sand had been drawn, and I knew in my heart He would never cross it. However, He did. I delivered a stillborn baby girl. With my precious daughter Rebecca still at home in a feeding tube and her future health completely unknown, it was a foregone conclusion that this baby we so wanted and loved would be saved. But she wasn't, and my line in the sand was crossed. My one-way deal with God was shattered. Everything changed in that moment. Fear set in, and my faith began to crumble. My safety zone with God was no longer safe. If this could happen in the midst of our great struggle, then anything was fair game. For the first time in my life, anxiety began to overwhelm me. That's just part of her story. I'll continue that in a couple minutes. So can't we all relate to this? I think we all want some kind of contractual agreement with God. And the fact that He hasn't signed it doesn't keep us from believing it. You know, we might have a pledge like this. I pledge to be a good, decent person, and in return, God will save my child, get my son off drugs, heal my wife, protect my job, and you all can fill in the blanks. You know, for me, it would be get my friend out of prison, you know, help my other friend find a job and stay off drugs and, you know, all these other things that we would, you know, have on our pledge. And, you know, they seem reasonable, right? But then God fails to meet our bottom line expectation. We're left spinning in a tornado of questions. Is He good at all? Is God angry at me? Stumped? Overworked? Is His power limited? Is His authority restricted? When life isn't good, what are we to think about God? Where is He in all this? Well, the story of Joseph in the Old Testament tells us that there were 7 years of plenty and 7 years of famine. And Joseph said that he saw both seasons, the one of plenty and the one of famine, beneath the umbrella of God's jurisdiction. So was the calamity God's idea? Of course not. Because God never creates evil. God can do no wrong. It's impossible for the Almighty to do evil. However, God does allow free choice, and He does permit some tragedies to happen. Yet the scripture also said that God has utter and absolute control over what happens to us. Bottom line is that He does not allow the bad to triumph over the good. Romans 8:28 says, "And we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love Him, who have been called according to His purpose." There are some isolated events that are terrible, but the ultimate accumulation is good. God uses evil to bring evil to naught. He is the master chess player. Our choice comes down to surrender. We will either trust God or turn away. He will cross our lines. He will shatter our expectations, sometimes in really good ways and sometimes in what we perceive as not such good ways. And we are still left to make a decision. But if we don't surrender to God, what is left to trust in? So here's the rest of Christina's story. I spent weeks trying to figure out why a God I so loved could let this happen to my family at such a time. The only conclusion I came up was this: I have to give up my line in the sand. I have to offer my entire life, every minute, every minute portion of it, to God's control regardless of the outcome. This is surrender. My family is in God's hands. No lines have been drawn, no deals made. I have given over our lives to the Lord. Peace has entered where panic once resided, and calmness settled where anxiety once ruled. So let us remember with Paul in 2 Corinthians 4:17 that our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. So, surrender to God or walk away. What will your choice be?
Well, Kath, that was a great spiritual lesson. And you could see from Christine, who turned around and was struggling with surrender, where she was saying to God, okay, I'll surrender and try to let go to you, but don't pass this line in the sand.
The line in the sand.
So again, what we're doing is bargaining with God and telling him that I'll let go of control as long as you do it my way.
Or as long as you don't do this, this, and this.
Yeah, and that doesn't work. And in this case, as we've seen in Christine's story, she did have the ultimate, which was the loss of her child. You see what I'm saying? So there was the ultimate that forced her to come to a place of surrender and letting go, or going insane, getting angry at God, walking away from God, higher power, and her life would have continued to spiral downward until she just evaporates into oblivion of hate and disgust in her life and passes away.
You're right. You're
so
right.
She came to a place of surrender and accepting what took place, even the ultimate, which was the loss of her child.
And,
you see?
Well, and then not only that, she decided in the future to turn the rest of her life and her family over to God and to not keep holding on to what the outcome was that she wanted.
Right. Now, when we think about the surrender, there's like two distinct stages to surrender that must occur. All right. Now, when you think about surrender, I surrender the fact that a power outside of myself could take control, and I accept that they're willing to take that control. God's willing to take that control and that power. If you listen to our last month's show, it was on acceptance. You see, acceptance. And that goes through stages of denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. Finally accepting what God is offering. And so the first stage has to do with denial. Denial. So even in surrendering, we're faced with denial. I am not an alcoholic, or I have it all under control. So I'm in denial that I don't have it under control, even though I try to have it under control. You believe that you have and that you are the power and solution.
See? So a codependent will say, I just know if I say this one thing or do this one thing more, that my addict will get it and everything will be fine.
Yeah, if I just keep pushing.
Yeah.
I gotta just
figure it out, and I know I can.
I know it. One more time. I'm going to harp on them one more time. I'm going to yell at them one more time. I'm going to berate them that they shouldn't have done that one more time. 1,000 times I've done it, but I keep pushing.
We're still in denial.
So I'm in denial. Mm-hmm. So the first step is to turn around and realize that this is obviously false in your case, and that you do have a problem. And that is the first stage of surrender, is to recognize I have a problem. Isn't that step one, that I have a problem?
You're surrendering to the fact that you cannot change your addict or your codependency.
There you go. So it's not enough just for you just to stay there, though, to acknowledge that all right, it's not working for me. You have to go to the next step. And the next step is that a deeper stage of surrender, which is there is another solution.
Ah.
You see?
There's another solution other than my solution?
Yes, there is. And that's step two, isn't it not? Stage two, step two, surrender, accepting a solution outside of yourself, a power outside of yourself that can actually fix it. So these are the steps in coming to surrender and acceptance. denial and accepting there is a solution outside of myself. No, I'll fix myself. I'll fix my addict. I'll fix my family. Obviously.
And the scary thing about that is because when you're surrendering, you don't know what that solution is going to be yet.
No, that's correct. You don't know the solution.
So you're kind of in limbo for a little bit.
And you're afraid of letting go of control because what does it look like? I don't know what it looks like because I've been doing it my way all these years. So I don't know what it looks like. Oh, you talk about going to some meetings, Nardnon meetings, or therapist,
you know how many
or see my
like,
priest or rabbi. What?
They look at me like I'm like, you need a Nardnon meeting. And they look at me like,
what? What? That's not a solution.
Why do I have to go?
Yeah, that's not a solution. Let me keep going. See? Because we're afraid of letting go. And letting go of control to somebody else, our brains only work in one way. And your brain is stuck in thinking your way is the only way.
Mm-hmm.
So in order to reach this two-stage surrender, you actually go through three steps. So
okay.
to do those
two steps
of denial and finding a solution outside. Well, number one, I'm just repeating it,
That's
that you recognize and admit that you have a problem and that you're in denial, mm-hmm. you see. And by what you're doing is you're realizing that the way that you're doing business right now is making you miserable. Isn't it not?
Hmm.
Aren't you miserable worrying about your addict? Aren't you miserable worrying about every family member, what they're doing, how they're doing, what's going on? And you make excuses for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? That if they would only do this way, they would only do that way. Acceptance of where they're at and how they're doing things.
So doesn't that mean that we might have to face our greatest fear?
Yeah. Our greatest fear, you know, become willing to face the fear that the outcome may not go the way we want.
Mm.
And in order to, to avoid the misery that you're living in today, you have to face the fears of letting go of that control to avoid the misery. So
I need you to explain that.
All right, so
I'm a little bit confused with how
the third
works.
This third step is critical.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
Fear is what's holding you back from recovery. Like we just said,
okay.
Fear that another solution outside of myself actually would work better than the way I do it. That God has a better way to do it than I do it. So the fear
keeps us
stuck where you're at.
Stuck where we're at and doing the same things over
and over and over
again.
And over, which is making you miserable.
Okay.
You see?
All right. Yeah,
so,
I'm definitely
so you have fear,
miserable.
You have fear and misery that are going hand in hand. So the pain mm-hmm. and the misery in your life must become greater than the fear that is holding them back. So
So
pain and misery in your life
mm-hmm.
must become greater than the fear. So here's what it is.
Okay.
I keep controlling. I'm afraid to let go of control.
Mm-hmm.
There's my fear.
Right.
I'm afraid to turn it over and surrender it to my higher power, accepting that he has the solution and
so
answer.
So I'm out following my addicted loved one.
Yeah.
And I'm not getting any sleep.
No.
And
your
he's
life is
still
miserable.
Out there. And it's not working, and I'm getting more and more angry.
Oh, my goodness.
You're really
going to doctors. You got medication to keep yourself sleeping at night, to
uh-huh.
wake yourself up at night. You're losing weight.
So
you're anxious. You have an ulcer.
So what you're saying is the fear of
trusting,
of
letting go, surrender,
is what's causing my misery.
Yes.
And so what ends up having to happen to recover is I have to hate the misery more than the fear.
There it is.
Hmm.
And it's the same thing in your addict's life, too, because you're an addict and they're an addict. You're an addict to your codependency and control.
Yeah.
They're an addict to the drug. And it comes to a place where you have to come to a place in your life where you turn around and say, I am so stinking miserable, I quit. I surrender.
Give me
another solution.
That's so good.
Oh, I need to go to Narnot. Oh, I need to go see a therapist. I need to let go. I got to stop following my addict around. Oh, my misery's not that bad enough. I'm going to still do that. I'm not ready to let go. You see what I'm saying?
Okay.
So eventually the misery will push you to a place where you turn around and say, all right, I'll let go of my fear.
Wow.
That the outcome has to go the way I want my outcome
to go.
That's
really cool, Bill. I like that because that's like, that takes a lot to think through.
It does. One is to reduce, so you have two options here.
Mm-hmm.
One is to reduce your fear
mm-hmm.
by surrender and acceptance of change. You know, I'm afraid to let change occur the way my higher power would want it to occur, to let go of that, surrender and accept that.
Let go of my belief that I know how to fix everything.
That's correct. So
that's
one.
Ego and be humble again.
That's right. So that's one angle. The other one is to increase the pain and misery in life by continue to do the control and the expectations that you put in your life and on your addict's life. And so you have two choices. Which one are you going to choose to do? And I want you to know you have to make a choice. Because if you do nothing, you will stay in the pain and misery because you're going to continue acting the way you currently act. So you have to make the choice that the way I'm acting today is not working. I'm in denial that I think I can make it work. And I have to come to a place and say the misery and pain and the results of what I have created or be a participant in here is great enough for me to say I'm willing to entertain the concept of surrendering to a power outside myself and accepting that power can lead, guide, and heal me through other means, resources, and steps than what I currently do. And that may mean go to Narnon, may mean go to a therapist. May mean stop following your addict around and letting go.
It's great. That's great. Is that great? I mean, it reminds me of the peace and resolve and how I felt the other night with my friend on the phone and just being with her in her powerlessness and my powerlessness and throwing it up and saying, well, I can't do any of it. I can't fix it. Yeah. And I did feel a peace because the burden wasn't on me anymore.
Right. Yeah. Oftentimes when I'm working with somebody, I always throw disclaimers because what I'll say to them is, look, I don't know the answer for you. I could say this, I could say that, but I don't know what God would want to happen in your life. So I'll throw out suggestions. I recommend you pray about it. I recommend you continue to talk to others, support and counsel, and then by faith make a choice, a decision whether or not you go see the therapist or whether or not you just start off with going to Narnon meetings or whether or not you see mm-hmm. what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And so I'll throw out thoughts, but I always use a disclaimer. I don't know what God has planned for you. Let's seek God, the power outside of ourselves, and see where He impressed to lead and guide and open different doors that you haven't tried in the past because the way you are doing it is not working and you're life is miserable. Your family's life is miserable because you are miserable and the way you are controlling and doing things. So when we talk about surrender to our higher power, there are two main reasons that we struggle. Now, one we've focused on a lot here, and that was fear of losing control. But there's another aspect that I really want to address with you. And that's the second part is how we perceive ourselves. Because if I want to move out of denial and acknowledge my fear of control of the outcome and surrender that to my higher power, then I may feel less than about who I am as an individual. I may feel that God looks upon me in a negative way, that my higher power can't accept me then with my shortcomings, that I feel less than who I am. And what I have to do is separate the fact that my value and worth is not predicated upon all about my actions.
Oh, you see what I'm saying? Yeah. That goes back to the fact that, again, we think we're controlling God.
Yeah.
By our behavior, one way or another.
That's correct. That's right. And it's not about – we know that this world – according to like the Bible, if you're into the Bible, this is a sinful world. So we battle sin and sinful tendencies and shortcomings. But the Bible says, God says, I know my thoughts towards you and they are of love. And so we know that God loves us. Another statement I mentioned earlier, He loves us even while we are sinners. So if I turn around and say, my value, my worth is not predicated upon whether or not I made mistakes in the past, that I didn't do things the best I could, whether or not I have an issue with a drug or whether I have an issue with control doesn't determine the value of who I am as an individual. So surrendering to a higher power is not about throwing in a towel and giving up on who you are as a person, saying that I'm no good less than, so let me give it to God. No, we don't surrender our best qualities. When we surrender, we are simply surrendering the negative emotions, the negative trauma, the pain that we've been holding us back from being truly happy. And that's to let go and trust that He can be in control and take care of me and my loved ones and that we both have values. The addict has values whether he's using or not. And I worked with a young man once who, in the Christian realm, you give your life to Christ. And he had given his life to Christ, but he still battled with heroin. And he used to say to me, he said, Bill, I always feel like you don't judge me. And I said, why would I judge you? Mm-hmm. Your value to me, how precious you are to me and how much love I have towards you is not predicated upon your victory over the heroin. Yes, I want you to have victory over because I know that you would enjoy life a lot more than being subjective to the outcomes of the heroin. And so this person understood and seeing me model for them God's love for you and for each one of his children, whether they're on drugs or whether or not they're controlling things and struggling with surrender. And I lost that young man to heroin overdose, but I know he understood love for who he was as he was, given his life to Christ, and I hope to see him in the kingdom to come.
Absolutely.
So we're surrendering our issues to our higher power in the belief that the higher power is greater than our own, and he can and will remove and lead us through the issues and problems of life, and we can let go and trust that he'll do it a different way than we think that we want to do and how we think to do it.
Yeah, so here's a little recap of what we've been going over through this show. We have to realize that we have a problem, which is our control and our fear and our misery and our thinking that we can control everything. Admit that we're miserable and that our addiction, our codependency is causing us to be unhappy. Become willing to accept a new solution on our life, a solution that is not our idea, but is someone else's, our higher powers.
Yeah, so if I turn around and say, all right, I'm willing, Bill, Kath, to try to move toward this place of letting go and there is another solution outside of myself and the higher power and I don't have to control, then what's my next step? And that is to ask for help. To say, all right, I'm willing to entertain that there's another way of doing business. And then when you see that, you're going to have to take action. It's going to say go to Narnon, go to a therapist, pray, look at your actions and see if whether or not you're defaulting back to control. Seek professional treatment if you have to. And then, of course, create and follow up and stay connected with a support system that supports the fact that you're trying to change, which means talk about people about your control issues. And that is my issue, Bill. So I'm calling you up because I feel like right now I need to do this in the addict's life, or I need to do this in my spouse's life. And then, of course, you want to pursue an active life of personal growth, reading books on boundaries or recovery and healing and going to church or to synagogue and creating a positive attitude and atmosphere in life, moving forward in a positive growth and trusting that God could do that in your addict's life without you over-functioning in their lives.
So in closing, we can choose to hold on to painful memories of the past and remain sad, angry, guilty, unhappy, or we could choose to surrender them to a higher power and live a free and contented life. Franklin Roosevelt once stated that there is nothing to fear but fear itself, and he was correct. When we hand our issues and other traumas over to a higher power, it is actually our deepest fear that we are surrendering. Ask anyone that has experienced a sudden, intense spiritual healing, and they will tell you that their fear was the first to go. Imagine a bridge with a town called Fear on one side and Happiness on the other side. Surrender is the name of the bridge that allows us to cross from one side to the other.
We hope you enjoyed tonight's program. We'll see you next month. God bless. Peace be with you. The victory is yours.